All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. So today's daf is Chav Dalet 24. We are picking up on the last line, Chav Gimel Amud Beis 23b. It's a beautiful Gemara we're going to do today. So the Gemara says, remember, V'Rabbi D'Rabbi Meir Ad Rabbi Meir V'Rami Rabbanon Ad Rabbanon. So remember again from yesterday, we had an interesting machlokas. The following, if you remember again, the case that the Gemara is trying to figure out, the case of how an Eved Kenani is able to become freed from Avdus with Kesef, with money. Because remember, this gets into one of the fundamental machloksim that we have, which is, does an Eved have the ability to acquire independent of his master? So the Gemara is suggesting that this is a fundamental machloksim, Rabbi Meir and the Rabbanon. So the Gemara wanted to set up the case, just to review for a moment, the Gemara wanted to set up the case of where a third party gave the Eved money and said to him, Amnas Shetetse Bolachirus. This is your money on the condition that you use it to go out from your servitude. So remember again, Rabbi Meir says that as soon as you give something to a slave, his master immediately acquires it. Meaning, once it reaches a slave's hands, by definition, it becomes the property of his master. Therefore, this mechanism, ultimately, of having the Eved by himself out of servitude does not work. The Rabbanon, on the other hand, say, no, this case does work. Why? Because in this case, I will say, essentially what the third party is saying to the Eved is, I don't want you to acquire. I'm not asking you to acquire the money. I'm just simply asking you to be the vehicle of transfer. I'm asking you to be the UPS guy to get the money from me to your master, but I'm not asking you to acquire. So again, the fundamental machlok is here, Rabbi Meir holds, whatever comes into an Eved's hand is going to be going to become the property of his master. Whereas the Chachamim essentially say, the Rabbanon say, that an Eved has the ability to be a courier from one party to another without acquiring on his own behalf. So the Gemara says, Rami Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Meir, Rami Rabbanon. It would appear that there will say we have contradictory statements. That we find Rabbi Meir contradicting himself, and the Rabbanon contradicting themselves. Why? This Sanya, because we learned in a Braisa, top of Chof Dalid, Ein Yisha Pode Maiser Sheni Belo Chomesh. Now, this is actually an interesting case. Literally, a woman cannot redeem Maiser Sheni without a fifth. Now, the halacha is the following. Maiser Sheni, you know, is the tithe that belongs to the actual produce owner, with one caveat, which is that it must be consumed within Yerushalayim. So you have a choice. You could either go ahead and you could bring the produce up to Yerushalayim, or you could redeem it for money, bring the money to Yerushalayim, spend the money, and buy food in Yerushalayim. So there's a halacha that says that if you go ahead and you redeem your own Maaser Sheni, you have to pay a one-fifth surcharge. But interestingly enough, if you redeem someone else's Maaser Sheni, you don't have to pay a one-fifth surcharge. So if I redeem my own Maaser Sheni, I have to pay a one-fifth surcharge. But if I redeem someone else's Maaser Sheni, there is no obligation for the one-fifth surcharge. So the Gemara says the following. So, Ein Isha Poda Maaser Sheni below Chomesh. If a woman redeems Maaser Sheni, she must tack on the additional fifth. Look at Rashi. Ein Isha Poda Maaser Sheni. Kasaka Dait Chaba Maaser Sheni Shum Isdei Bailo. Kishehi Kibbailo. Vikarinon Lei Mi Maasro. So, we'll say what this sounds like over here is that a woman is redeeming her husband's Maaser Sheni. And therefore, if she redeems her husband's Maaser Sheni, she can't do it without a fifth. Without a fifth. Okay, because the assumption is that she's just like her husband. Reb Shimon Elazar says, Rabbi Meir, Isha Poda Maaser Sheni Belo Chomesh. So Reb Shimon Elazar says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, that a woman has the ability to redeem her Maaser Sheni without the fifth. Without the fifth. So now she says over here, Isha Poda Belo Chomesh, because we assume the Maaser Sheni is not hers. Now we're going to define what the case is in just a moment. So again, Rabbi Meir says, a woman can redeem Maaser Sheni without the fifth. So says the Gemara Hechi Dami. So what's the case here? See, if you want to say we're talking about a case where what? Where the money, the redemption money belongs to the husband, and the produce belongs to the husband, then what? Shlichuse de Baal Ka'avda. Then she's simply what? She's simply the agent of the husband. And if she's the agent of the husband, then what do we say? Then Allah should be obligated to add on the fifth. Ve'ela bezuzi didach u'maiser didei. Rather, it must be that it's her money, and his produce. If that's the case, ish amar rachmana velo isha. If that's the case, we'll say, then what? Look at Rashi. Ela bezuzi didach dinich seimalok. It must be her money. husband's meiser, ish amrachmana v'lo isha rashi, ish mi maaser amrachmana v'lo isha, mi maaser baila di isha ke'acher damya. So we'll say, if it's her money and his produce, then what? Then of course there's no fifth. Fifth surcharge, because the halacha of the fifth surcharge is only when you are redeeming your own produce. Rather, the Gemara says, Ela lav ki ay gavna. Rather, it must be the following case. The akni la acher mana must be that someone else gave the woman money. Va'amar la, and he said to her, Amanas shetifti bo es hamaiser. Rather, it must be that someone else is giving her money, and he's saying to her, this is your money on the condition that you use it to go ahead and redeem your husband's miser. Right? Your miser sheni. I both say, now remember, so what is Rabbi Meir saying in that case? Rabbi Meir is saying in this kind of case, where someone gives the woman money and tells her, this is your money on the condition that what? That you redeem your husband's miser, she can redeem it without a fifth. Additional fifth, which tells you what? That outside, that money is hers and not his. Now both say, now why is this a novelty, or why is it a contradiction? Because this is the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir said before on Amud Beis that what? That just like an Eved can't acquire anything independently of his master, so too what? An Isha can't acquire anything independently of her husband. If that's the case, I will say that when someone gives the wife money, what should happen? Should become property of the husband. If it becomes property of the husband, then when she redeems it, what is the case? It's a case of his money, his produce, in which case, what should be the halacha? The extra fifth, the chomesh, should in fact be in effect. So therefore, again, we have an inherent contradiction between the shitos of Rabbi Meir. Take a look at Rashi for just a moment. So someone's giving her money with the condition that she acquired this money to redeem the produce of her husband like an independent individual. And therefore the Gemara says, Savri ki amar la kani kani le baila, b'chi amar la amanas lav klomu, hilchach zuzi havinami de balu, shichuse abda ishi masro karina bei, Rabbi Meir savar le didei gufa lo akni. So therefore again, Rabbi Meir is contradicting himself, to which the Gemara says, v'ipcha shamana lohu. And yet we learned before that Rabbi Meir says the exact opposite. So here, the Gemara indicates that Rabbi Meir holds that it's possible for a woman to acquire independent of her husband, and yet before Amud Beis we learned that what? That a woman cannot acquire independent of her husband, just like an Eved can't acquire independent of his master. So we are, so Rabbi Eifuch, so says the simple answer, Rabbi says, not a problem, just switch it around. Just, in other words, reverse the shitos. And Rabbi Meir, you say that Rabbi Meir is the opinion who says what? That even in this case, where someone gives the woman money and says, this is your money on the condition that you use it to redeem your husband's property, that what's the, or your husband's maaser sheni, excuse me, that what's the halacha? The halacha, she can redeem it, but what? She has to pay the chomesh, she has to pay the fifth, because whatever a woman acquires ultimately becomes the property of her husband. So just switch the shitos, and therefore Rabbi Meir is in alignment. Rava Amar, Rava says, no, the olam lo seifach. In reality, don't switch it around. So what's the case? What's the case of Yerbosai? V'hacha b'maiser da'asa mebeid nasha askinan. Oh, this is talking about a case of maiser sheni that she acquires from her husband, from her father's home. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. Da'asi mebeid nasha, almost right across in Rashi. Shemei sabia, the case of here is where her father died. So we'll say what's happening over here. The case is where her father died, and in her father's possessions, he left behind Maiser Sheni. The Yerusha haba la'achar mikan nichsem elokein, v'yilakach ben karkav v'ochal peros. Normally the halacha is like this. When a woman acquires property, generally what we do is, or a woman acquires assets, generally what we do is we convert that asset into real property, into land. Woman owns the land. Husband enjoys the rights to the peros. That's generally what happens whenever a woman inherits something. So watch this. So in this case over here, instead of inheriting normal metalkin, movable property, she's inheriting from her father, Maiser Sheni. So now the shaila is like this. Ramir goes according to his reasoning, who says, Do'amar Maiser Mamon Hekdishu. Rabbi Meir holds that Maiser Sheni is considered to be Mamon Hekdish, is considered to be consecrated property. And I will say, now the novelty in saying that Maiser Sheni is Mamon Hekdish is what? Remember, what do you do with Maiser Sheni? Right, you eat it. Right, you have to, it's true, you have to take it to Yerushalayim, but it's yours, you eat it. Nevertheless, Rabbi Meir holds that the entity, but the essence of Ma'aser Sheni is Mamon Hekdesh. It is consecrated property. So because of that, when the woman inherits it, the husband gets no rights in it. He has no rights. And therefore, again, what happens? When she goes ahead and she redeems the Ma'aser Sheni, what's going to be the halacha? There's no... Well, now one second. So say he's going to say, of course it's chomesh. Why? Because when you redeem your own Ma'aser Sheni, it's chomesh. Except, remember, what did we say? Ish velo isha. Remember, she's going to get off on a technicality. Right? The technicality is, it only applies to a man, does not apply to a woman. Therefore, again, it's her Ma'aser Sheni because she inherited it, but there's no chomesh because she's an isha. Therefore, again, the husband does not go ahead and acquire it, and therefore, again, I will say now there are two possibilities here. Possibility number one is the way I just said it, that again she could be redeeming it even with her own money, and she won't have to go ahead and pay the chomesh. Rashi also points out that the way you could set up the case over here is how? That she could be redeeming it with the husband's money. Right? You could even set up she's redeeming it, which is, again, so it's her meiser, husband's money, but again, there'll be no obligation of chomesh. That's Rabbi Meir Shita. On the other hand, Rabbanon Latamayu to Amri, Mamon Hedyotu. The Rabbanon Rabbah say, on the other hand, hold that what? That meiser sheni is Mamon Hedyot. Mamon Hedyot means what? Means what? Regular money. Regular money. So I'll say, it's actually very interesting. Therefore, Vakanile Baal, so I'll say, let's play this out. Therefore, what happens in a regular case where she acquires Ma'aser Sheni? So it really does become property of the husband. Therefore, when she redeems the Ma'aser Sheni of, her Ma'aser Sheni, so to speak, with her husband's money, it's really considered to be the husband's Ma'aser Sheni, and therefore what? Therefore, he has the obligation for Chomesh. So therefore, I'll say, what the Gemara essentially says is the following. What we originally thought was a contradiction in the Shita of Rabbi Meir, turns out not to be a contradiction. Why not? Because the Gemara wants to bring the contradiction case from the case of Ma'aser Sheni. And it turns out that Lamaisa, Ma'aser Sheni is actually a separate animal. That Ma'aser Sheni, again, is a more fundamental machlokes. Is Ma'aser Sheni Mamon Hekdish, or is Ma'aser Sheni Mamon Hedyot? Is Ma'aser Sheni considered to be consecrated property or regular property? What's the nafkamina? What's the practical difference? Mm-hmm. Oh, the practical difference is in this case, where a woman inherits Ma'aser Sheni. So what do we say? Normally, when a woman inherits personal property, Mamon Hedyot, that becomes the property of the husband. So if you say Ma'aser Sheni is Mamon Hedyot, then when she acquires Ma'aser Sheni, who also acquires Ma'aser Sheni? Husband. Therefore, when she redeems the Ma'aser Sheni with husband's money, that's like the husband redeeming his own Ma'aser Sheni, and therefore what? Chomesh. If, on the other hand, you hold that Ma'aser Sheni is Mamon Hekdesh, no, Ma'aser Sheni is not personal property. Ma'aser Sheni is considered to be consecrated property. And again, the novelty there is, despite the fact that it's mine and I can eat in Yerushalayim, it's still considered to be Mamon Hekdesh. Therefore, when she acquires it, husband does not acquire it. Therefore, when she redeems the Ma'aser Sheni with her husband's money, the Ma'aser Sheni belongs to her. The money belongs to the husband, and therefore, again, there's going to be no chomesh surcharge. So we'll say, so that's where we stop with this. The machloksin of Meir and the Rabbanon, therefore, is still intact. There's a fundamental machloksin, the Rabbanon and Rabbi Meir, as to whether or not there's a concept of something coming to the hand of an Eved, but yet the Eved not acquiring it. That's the Shaila. So Rabbi Meir holds, as soon as an object comes to the hands of the Eved automatically acquires. The Rabbanon says you have the ability to make the Eved a courier to convey something from a third party to the Adam. Says the Gemara Tana, was another interesting case. So now we're going to get into a little bit of a different discussion by Eved Kenani about how an Eved Kenani goes free. Or I should say one of the ways. So Tana, Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin V'Rashayvarim, Shein An Chozrim. The halacha is that an Eved Kenani goes free if the master knocks out literally a tooth, an eye, or the top of the limbs, Rashi Varim, we'll discuss what they are, the top of any of the limbs that do not grow back. So, master lops off the top of a finger, the top of a toe, an ear, things like that, that if they come off, do not grow back. So the Gemara said, if any of those things, if he ever suffers any of those injuries, the halacha is, he automatically goes free. So says the Gemara, Bishlam Hashem V'ayin Ksivi. So we'll say, so I understand if the master goes ahead and what? And accidentally cuts off or accidentally knocks out a tooth or an eye, that the Eved goes free. We'll say, how do I know that? Because the Pasuk explicitly talks about that. pasuk explicitly mentions Shein Vayin. El Rashi Evarim Minalan. I will say, how do I know about the other tops, about the other, literally Rashi Evarim means like the tips of other parts of the body. How do I know that if the Adon accidentally cuts off the tips of any of the other parts of the body, that Lamaisa, again, the Eved goes free? Where do I know that from? Dumya de Shin Va'ayin. Because it's compared to Shin Va'ayin, to tooth and an eye. Ma Shin Va'ayin, Mum Shabagaloi Ve'inan Chosrin. Just like the loss of a tooth or the loss of an eye are external blemishes. In other words, they are visible blemishes and they do not regenerate. So to any blemish that the Eved suffers, that A, is visible, and B, does not regenerate, is grounds for immediate emancipation. So why don't you say the following? So it's actually very interesting. There's a concept like this. When the Torah states a principle, so often the Torah states a particular principle in order for that principle to become a paradigm. If, however, the Torah states the same principle twice, that generally means what? It's coming to teach you that it's not a paradigm. Rather, again, the principle is limited to these two specific situations, which is logical. The Torah wants to create a principle from a, or if Torah wants to create a paradigm, state the principle once, because they don't want to understand this is halacha. When you state the same concept twice, that seems to be limiting things to a particular set of circumstances. So why don't you say the fact that the Torah went out of its way to state both Shein and Ayin, that's what we call Shnei Ksuvin Abayin Ke'achot, two psukim that are seemingly teaching me the same thing, and the halacha is by Shnei Ksuvin Abayin Ke'achot, Ein Malamdin. We cannot go ahead and establish a paradigm based on two things that teach me the same halacha. So the Gemara says, Sricham, I'll tell you why. The truth is, you need the Torah to state both Shein and Ayin, both the tooth and the eye. Why? Listen to this. Because of Rachmana Shein, has the Torah just mentioned Shein, that if the master knocks out a tooth, the Eved goes free. Hava Aminu Afilu Shein Dechalav. I would have thought, well, it's actually interesting. Shein Dechalav is a milk tooth. What's a milk tooth? Baby teeth. I would have thought that even if the Adam knocks out the baby tooth of the slave, that the slave goes free. Therefore, because of Rachmana Ayin. Therefore, the Torah Dafka puts in their eye to teach you that Harabosai, that it's only something that does not regenerate. The Kasev Rachmana Ayin, and had the Torah just written eye, that if you knock out the Evet's eye, the Evet goes free. Hava Amina Ma'ayin Shenivra Imo, Avkal Shenivra Imo. I would have thought that the only thing that sends an Evet free, Harabosai, is what? Something that the Evet is born with, like his eye. Aval Shein, but again, a tooth, which only grows in later on. Lo! Perhaps, again, if the Adon knocks that out, the Eved does not go free. Therefore, what? Therefore, Tzricha. Therefore, Moshe, you see that I need the Torah to state both Shein and Ayin. Ve'ema, so why don't I say the following? So Moshe, the Gemara now is quoting the Pasuk. Of V'chiyake ish es ein avdo o es ein amaso. If a man will go ahead and strike the eye of his slave, or the eye of his maidservant, v'shichasa, and he destroys it, l'chafshi yishachinu takaseinu. The Eved is sent free, literally because of his eye. So says the Gemara, why don't you say the following, ve'ima, kiyake, klal, the phrase kiyake, when an adon will strike his servant, is a klal, it's a generally inclusive statement. Shein v'ayim, then it says eye or tooth, prat, that's specific, prat uklal, excuse me, I'm sorry, klal uprat. So what do you see over here? You have a general statement and a specific statement. So the Rabbos say the halach is whenever you have a klal uprat, ein b'chlal elamashe b'prat, the klal could only include specifically what is included in the prat, in the specific one, namely what? So the Gemara says, mashe b'prat, shein v'ayin in midiachrin. Hello? Maybe the prat over here is shein v'ayin. That should teach me that what? That it's only shein and ayin that allow an eved to go free. But other parts that the adon knocks out, does not allow the Eved to go free. To which the Gemara says, No, because the Pasuk ends off by saying, for his freedom you shall send him. It's another inclusive statement. Therefore, what is it? It's a klalu pratu klal. So in fact, I'll say what you have is a general statement, a limiting statement, and then another general statement. And what's the halacha? Klalu pratu klal. In that case, I will say the prat, the specific phrase, is coming to create a paradigm. Mahaprat mufurash mum shabagali veinan chozrin, just like shein v'ayin abosai what, are considered to be, are visible blemishes that do not regenerate. Af mumin shabagali veinan chozrin. So too again, abosai Torah is coming to include what? All types of injuries, all types of blemishes that are A, visible, and B, do not regenerate. So therefore, again, any blemish that is A, visible, and B, does not regenerate, the halacha is what? That if an eved suffers this particular blemish, this particular injury, he goes free. So one second, why don't you say, Imah prat mefurash, mumin shebegoloi, ubatal mimalachto ve'ino chuzer. Why don't you say, I will say, that's what? That the prat, the specific case, is coming to teach you what? Visible blemishes, batal mimalachto. I will say, batal mimalachto, I mean, look at Rashi, batal mimalachto, it's the third white line on top. Batal mimalachto, ha'ayin nismes miraos, vashim milalos. The particular part of the body that was damaged can no longer perform its function. So why don't you say, really what the prat of Shane Rand is coming to teach me, is that any injury that is A, galoi, that is visible, B, batal mimalachto, can no longer perform its function, and C, eino chozer, and number three, does not regenerate. If a blemish satisfies those three criteria, that's when an eved will go free. Af kol, therefore, just, and Rose said, that's shein v'ayin. If an adon, if a master knocks out his slave's eye or his slave's tooth, so remember again, the three criteria are, number one is visible, number two, the part of the body is no longer functional, batal mimalachto, and number three, it doesn't regenerate. So to afkol mumin shabagoli, the ino chozer batal mimalachto. So to any injury, I will say, that satisfies those three criteria. Number one, again, visible. Number two is unable to perform its function. And number three, does not regenerate. Any blemish that fits those three categories should also allow a servant to go free. If that's the case, alama tanya, why did we learn talash bezikno? Vidildil bo etzem. It was an interesting case. If you pulled the beard of the Eved, and I guess it's talking about you somehow dislocated, I don't know if there's such a thing as a chin bone, or you dislocated some, maybe jaw, you dislocated some bone over here. What is it? Okay. Can you eat if it's a... Okay, so what? So you're dislocating something here. You're dislocating something. Now, what's interesting is the halacha says eved yotze l'chirus. So the halacha is that an eved goes free. The eved goes free as a result, ultimately, again, of this. Now, I will say, the injuries that we are referring to over here are permanent injuries. Because remember, anything that's a temporary injury, so once, if the eved heals, the eved doesn't go free. So what the Gemara is describing over here is some type of injury, where, again, the damage is permanent, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really impact the Eved all that much. So the halacha is, so talash b'zikna, if you pulled his beard, v'dildol bo etzem, you dislodged or dislocated some type of bone. So the halacha is, Eved yotzei bo l'cheirus. Right? The Eved goes free. So if you look at Rashi, it will say, Eved yotzei l'cheirus, it's the last white line on top. So this would be the type of injury where the bone is somehow going to wither. So somehow, the type of injury that they're describing over here is lemaisa the following, that it's a permanent injury. It is visible, but it's not what's called batal mimalachto. Batal mimalachto means, again, it doesn't really impact the eved in a tangible way. All right, so the physicians are going to have to do their homework on this, what exactly we're discussing over here. So the Gemara says over here, so what do you see from here? The point that you're seeing over here is that lemaisa, batal mimalachto, is not one of the criteria, to which the Gemara says, you're right. L'chav shi'ishalchenu ribuya. Because the pasuk says, "L'chav shi'ishalchenu, for freedom you shall send him," is another ribui. is another inclusive phrase. Now look at Rashi. The ribu yehu eno lashon klal lihios nidan klal uprat ela beriba umiet veriba hakol. So we'll say, therefore, again, what the Gemara is suggesting is the mechanism for darshaning these psukim is not a klal uprat. Rather, the mechanism for darshaning these psukim is a ribuy, a miut, and a ribuy. Like we discussed a few days ago. We discussed this last week. Jeff Rabo said, the phrase of l'chavshi yishalchenu is a ribuy, and that comes to include what? That comes to include all cases of injuries that are A, begoloi, visible, and B, einan chozrin, do not regenerate. Even if it's not batal mimalachto, if it's visible and it does not regenerate, that sends an eved free. If that's the Gemara says, so the Gemara, I'm sorry, the chavshish v'iribuyu, v'iribuyahu, afilu hikal al yado v'tzimsa, v'sof alachzor. So we'll say, if you're going to tell me that that phrase is a riboy, and it includes all different types of injuries. So why don't we say that even if the master injures the Eved's hand, and literally vitzimsa means that it withers. But Rabbi said, but what's going to happen? But it has the ability to heal. Maybe the Eved should go free as a result of that as well. Alama Tanya, why did we learn? If a master struck the Eved on the arm, and the arm withered, however, v'sofa lachzar, but it's going to heal. Ein eved yotzei ba'lecheiros. An eved does not go free. Rabbi says it's actually a very important halacha. If the adon breaks the hand, breaks the arm of the slave, the slave does not go free. Why? Because Rabbi says that's sofa lachzar. Because the halacha is that it's going to heal, it's going to come back. So I don't understand. If you're telling me that l'chavshi yishalchenu, that phrase is a ribuy and comes to include all injuries, so why is it even if the adon injures the eved in a way from which the eved will heal, the eved should still go free? To which the Gemara says, well, im kein, shein va'ayin maya hanilei. I will say, if you're going to tell me that a slave goes free, even for injuries from which he will heal, then what does shein va'ayin teach me? Shein va'ayin, I will say, is very specific. What's specific about them? The type of injuries that A, are visible, and B, do not heal. Therefore, the Gemara understands that the nature of injuries for which an eved goes free have to fit that paradigm. A, are visible, and B, do not regenerate, do not heal. Tan Rabbanon, so learned in a brayso, the kulam eved yotzei bem lecheirus, the tzarech get shichra divrei b'shimon. We'll say, now, this is actually very interesting. Now the Gemara transitions a little bit. So the Gemara says over here, let's say in all these different types of injuries, let's assume right now that the paradigm or the framework for injuries for which an eved immediately goes free are injuries that what? Are begaloi, are visible, and B, eno chozer, do not regenerate. So says the Raisa, for any injury for which an eved goes free, he requires a get shichra. He requires a document of emancipation. This is the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir says, eno tzarcha. Meir says, no, he doesn't need to get shichra. Rabbi Eliezer Omer tzarcha, those that says, he needs to get shichra. Rabbi Tarfon Omer eno tzarcha, Rabbi says, no get shichra. Rabbi Kiva Omer tzarcha, Rabbi Kiva says he needs to get shichra. So we'll say, so fundamental machlokas, actually quite interesting, when an eved goes free because of injury, does he require a document of emancipation or not? And you see over here that it's what? It's a machlokas. Hamachriyam afnei chachamim, those who decide halachic matters before the chachamim, omrim, nirin divrei Rabbi Tarfon v'shein v'ayin. So the words of Rabbi Tarfon, what does Rabbi Tarfon say? Rabbi Tarfon says, you don't need to get shichra. So the words of Rabbi Tarfon seem to be correct when an eved is going free because of the loss of an eye or the loss of a tooth. Why? Shator zachsalo. Because we'll say those are the explicit cases mentioned in the Torah. So look what the Gemara says. It would appear that if an eved is going free because of a lost tooth or a lost eye, the master knocked him out, then what? He goes free and he doesn't require get shichra. Why not? Because those are the cases of injury-related emancipation that are written explicitly in the Torah. So because they're explicit, therefore what? Therefore, the maisa, again, you don't need to get shichra. However, again, the nirin de Rabbi Akiva, b'shari barim, hoyel uknas chachamim. But the halacha seems to follow Rabbi Akiva that you do need to get shichra with any other type of injury. Why? Because these other types of injuries he calls are knas chachamim. Now, but knas chachamim literally means what? A rabbinic penalty. So the Gemara says, knasu, what do you mean that the other types of injuries are rabbinic? Well, that's not true. Remember, we just darshan. How do we learn the rest of the penalties? They're all learned out from Shein and Ayin. But that's not called a rabbinic penalty, Rabbi Oseh. That's learned explicitly from the Pasuk. To which the Gemara says, Ela hoil umidrash chachamim hu. Rather, what it means is that what? Shein va'ayin are written explicitly in the Torah. The other type of injuries are what? Are learned out. Are learned out from drushas. Therefore, the Gemara wants to suggest the following. The Gemara wants to suggest that for Shein va'ayin, which are written explicitly in the Torah, so if an Eved is going free because of Shein and Ayin, he does not require a get shechar. There's no document of emancipation because there's an explicit emancipation. If, however, the Eved is going free because of some other injury that's learned out from Shein and Ayin, in those cases, you should have to have a get shechar. Says the Gemara, my time with Rabbi Shimon. What is Rabbi Shimon's logic? So Rabbi Shimon says that the halacha is that in every case, Shein, Ayin, any other type of injury, when the Eved is going free, he requires a get shechar, requires document of emancipation. So that's Rabbi Shimon's logic. Yolif shiluach shiluach misha. He learns out a gzeirah shava of shiluach shiluach shulcha mibeso. Right, lachav shi. Remember, it says by Eved lachav shi yishalchenu. But freedom, to freedom you shall send him. And by isha, by woman, it says what? Vishilcha mibeso. You shall send her away from your home. Ma isha bishtar. Just like for a woman, you can only send her away with a shtar. Af eved nami bishtar. So to an eved was that could only be sent away with what? Could only be sent away with a shtar. Rabbi Meir, ikasiv chavshi lebasov kidika amrit. So Rabbi Meir would say the following. You know, if the pasuk would have said, yishalchenu chavshi, I would have agreed with you. However, hashta the kasiv lechavshi yishalchenu. Well, Rabbi Meir makes a very interesting diuk. Rabbi Meir said, had the pasuk said, Yishalchenu chavshi, I would have said that I would agree with your drush, and I would have said that there's some process of shiluach, there's some process of sending the Eved away that is needed to create emancipation. What's the nature of that shiluach? That would be a shtar shichrer. Now that it says, however, what? Lechavshi Yishalchenu, it indicates to us that the Eved is immediately free upon injury, even without the Shtar Shechar. Okay, so Moses says, therefore, fundamental machlokas. Now, just you should know the way that Rambam Paskins like Rabbi Shimon, namely, that any time an Eved goes free, even as a result of injury, a Shtar Shechar, a document of emancipation, is still required. So even though, again, one would have thought that immediate injury of eye, tooth, or any of the other 24 tips of parts of the body automatically sends them free, halakha l'maaseh again still requires a get shechar. Ten rabbanon. So let's listen to this case. He called Alei Novesama, Alos Novecharsha, Eved Yotzei L'Necheder. So it's like, obviously, if a master hits the Eved in the eye and blinds the Eved, or hits him on the ear and makes him deaf, the halakha is that the Eved goes free. Okay. However, what happens? Neged eino ve'ino roa, keneged ozno ve'ino shomer. Let's listen to this case. What happens, however, if the master does something opposite the eye of the Eved that blinds him, or opposite the ear of the Eved that causes him to go deaf? Above saying, now, in these cases, what's happening? Look at Rashi. Keneged eino shehika bekosel ve'ev iso bekol. What is he describing over here? Shock. Let's say the Adon shocks the Eved. He makes a dramatic loud noise opposite the Eved, which causes the Eved to go blind, it causes the Eved to go deaf. So remember, he's not directly damaging the Eved. He's creating a situation that sends the Eved into shock, and the shock results in either blindness or deafness. So what's the halacha? What's the halacha will say? So, ein eved yotzei v'necheres. In that case, the eved does not go free. Why doesn't the eved go free? Well, it appears because the adon is not directly harming the eved, but rather, again, is creating a secondary shock situation that causes the eved to suffer the hearing loss or suffer the loss of sight. Bless you. So the Gemara says the following. Listen to this. The Gemara says, Amar Rav Shimon Rav Ashi, lememer de kol lav klomu. Are you trying to say that kol, that a loud noise that generates damage, is not halachically meaningful, right? The person is not responsible for that. But yet, Rabbi Chezkel taught, Tarnagol shaho shit rosho la'avir kli schuchis. Well, so listen to this case. Let's say you have a rooster that stuck its head into a glass utensil. So remember what's happening over here. So Reuven's rooster stuck its head into my glass utensil. V'takabo, and what does it do? It crows. V'shavro, and as a result of crowing in my glass utensil, Reuven's rooster he destroys my utensil, right? The sound itself smashes the utensil. So what's the halacha? So ultimately, again, Reuven has to pay full damages to me because of what his rooster did. If a horse neighed, v'chamer shenar, or a donkey, I think it's a horse neighed and a donkey brayed, right? Good. Greg affirmed that. Good, Baruch Hashem. Right, so the horse, you are from Rochester, right? This stuff is like my simchal yom. Right, so the Gemara says, so the horse brayed, and I'm sorry, the horse neighed and the donkey brayed, the shavru kelim, and they both say what happens, and they smashed utensils, b'sochabai, so then the home, b'shamachas says, and if they have damage, they both say, I want to point out, the machlokis over here, of full damages, half damages, is a secondary machlokis about sroros. And we'll say now, again, this has to do when an animal damages in a way that's not directly with its body. So remember, if an animal tramples over something, that's nezek shalim, full damages. If an animal damages with a secondary force, now of course the classic is secondary force is where what? The animal kicks up pebbles, and the pebbles damage. Another example of secondary force is what? Voice. Here, in this case over here, what's happening? So as a result, ultimately, again, of the animal's voice, so this damage being caused, suppose it says, machlokis, by secondary damage, do you pay full damages or half damages? That machlokis is actually immaterial to our discussion. What does matter? That everyone holds that you're chayiv for damages done through the neighing and braying and crowing of animals, which tells us that what? That kol is a direct damaging force. If kol is a direct damaging force, then what? That if the adon goes ahead and makes a loud noise opposite the eved and causes the eved to go into shock, resulting in what? Either blindness or deafness, then what should be the halacha? That should be like direct damage, and therefore, again, that should be like the adon is directly damaging the eved should go free. Amr Lay, to which he responded, Shiny Adam. No, a person is different. Why? Dechevan de Bar Dasu. This is actually very interesting. Because since the Eved has his own Das, Ihu Mavis Nafshe. It's actually quite interesting. What's Talocha? He is responsible. He's allowing himself to go into shock. In other words, he's responsible for this. Look at Rashi. Shiny Adam de Bar Dasu. Hai Nizak v'chimivas midaite kamivas shenosin libo al-pachad kol abba pitom. It's actually quite interesting. What the Gemara is saying is, his reaction to the loud noise is what's creating this circumstance. Had he chosen to potentially react differently to this shock, then Lemaisa, again, he would not have been damaged. So what does this mean? So see what the Gemara is saying over here is, different people, the fact that he's reacting to the loud noise in this way is somewhat a result of how he deals with these type of circumstances. Had he perhaps been a little bit more resilient, the loud noise would not have had the same impact on him. Okay, an interesting idea. Kedesanya, as we learned, Hamavis eschaveiro pater medini adam v'chavdini shara. This is actually very interesting. If I scare my friend, I decide to go ahead and jump out of the closet. And what happens? Reuven has a heart attack. And as a result of having a heart attack, you know, he can't go ahead and work. So we'll say, I'm not chayef for that. Or I should say, at least, I'm not chayef b'dini adam. Reuven can't sue me for lost wages in a human court. However, again, the chayef b'dini shemayim, they both say, I am chayef klap b'shemayim. In other words, at the end of the day, I did do something that resulted in damaging someone else, but lamaisa, I can't be able to chayef for damages. However, taka ba'azno, v'char shalpater, sinem both say, if I made a loud noise opposite someone's ear, right? And therefore he went deaf, daloch is not potter. Because Rabbos say, again, all of these cases are cases of indirect damages. I'm not chayin for that. However, on the other hand, achzov v'takabazno, the Charshchar will say, if I took hold of Ruvain and I yelled in his ear, then in that case, I'm chayin. Rabbos say, now what's interesting about this case is the following, that's what? This is because I took hold of him. The idea over here is, in this case, I literally grabbed him and yelled opposite his ear. Now here's the interesting case. Meaning, you could have Rabbos say, the following two cases. If I'm standing opposite Reuven, same proximity, and I yell, and he goes deaf, nothing. If I take hold of him and I yell, then I'm chayiv. Which is interesting, because in the case where I've taken hold of him, again, I'm engaging in a maisa hezek. There's an action there. As opposed to if I'm just yelling while standing opposite him, there's no actual maisa. So the Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, he koal eino v'kasa. If I hit him in the eye, if I hit the eved in the eye, and I caused, now bosai kasa is, he didn't go blind, but I caused vision loss. Or I'll shein over another, or I hit him in the mouth, I hit him in the tooth, and the tooth became loose. Im yachal lishtayim shen achshav, if the eved has the ability to still see, or to still use his tooth, ein eved yotzev mecheres. Well, it's very important to halacha. Say if I damage my eved in a way that doesn't preclude the functionality of the part of the body. So he could still see out of the eye, he could still use the tooth, he doesn't go free, even though what? I've compromised, right? I've damaged, I've compromised. But as long as it's still usable, he doesn't go out. V'imlav evi yosef mecheres. But halacha lemais, again, if I hit him in the, if I compromise his vision to such a degree that he can't see, or I knocked out, or I made his tooth so loose that it's not usable, then halacha lemais, he does go free. Tanya idach, another braisa, harishaisa ino kuhuya v'sama. It's case number two is where, let's say, the eved already had poor vision, and I went ahead and hit him in the eye and fully blinded him. Or his tooth was already loose. Shina neduda ve'pila, or tooth was already loose and I knocked it out. What's the halacha? Im yachol lishtam eshren kvar, but if before I injured the eved, the eye was usable, he had some vision, or the tooth was still usable, so what's the halacha? And then I blinded the eye, or I knocked out the tooth. Eved yotzei v'mecheres. Then the eved goes free. Ve'im lav, but if not, ein eved yotzei v'mecheres, the eved doesn't go free. Then I will say, now these two prices seemingly say the same exact thing. To which the Gemara says, I'm going to tell you why we need both cases. I would have thought, in the first case it makes sense, because why? The eved started off with good vision. His eye was fine. And then I compromised his vision. But I would have thought, had the Bryson not stated the second case, I would have thought, Abosai, if they already had compromised vision to begin with, and then I knock out his eye, I would have thought, that's what? Maybe I'm not chayyeh for that. Why? Why? The guy already had bad vision. His vision was already compromised. Therefore, again, the second Bryson teaches you, that's what? Even if he had a compromised vision. But I blinded him, I'm still chayyeh for that. V'yashvin ha-mishum de-samilei le-gamrei. Or if it would have just said the second case, because in the second case, I'm blinding him in totality. Aval ha-sam de-lo-samilei le-gamrei imalo. But I would have thought in the first case, Rabosai, I'm only compromising his vision, but not totally blinding him. Perhaps, again, le-maisa, I'm not chayyeh in that case. Therefore, again, tzricha. So we'll say what comes out is the following. Therefore, Allah Chalamayis, what the Gemara is suggesting is the following. Well, if the Eved began with good vision, and then I hit him in the eye, and compromised his vision, if he still has some usable vision, then halach lamais, he doesn't go free. But if the minimal vision he has is not usable at all, then lamais, he will go free. Similarly, if he already had compromised vision, and I then subsequently blind him, we don't see that since his vision was compromised, I didn't really damage him. Rather, again, if he had some vision, and I took away that vision, I blinded him, then halach lamais, again, I am chayyeh for that, and the eved will go free. All right. So we'll stop over here. We're going to pick up with Tan Rabbanan tomorrow.
How do you define usable vision? It's not a very precise...